You just tuned into the hippest way to start and grow your indie author career. Learn the ins, the outs, and all the all-arounds of self-publishing with the team from D2D and their industry-influencing guests. You're listening to Self-Publishing Insiders with Draft to Digital.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Self-Publishing Insiders. Today, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the show James Blatch and Catherine Matthews from the Self-Publishing Show live, coming all the way from England. Welcome, you two.
Hey.
Hi.
It's like 90 degrees in England today. It's a bit like being in America.
It's boiling.
No way.
It's 90.
I should be over there. For those of you who may not know James or Catherine, let me do a quick introduction. So James is the founder of the Self-Publishing Show Live, as well as the course platform, Learn Self-Publishing, the podcast, Indie Writers Club, and the book discount mailing list, Hello Books. He is also a Cold War military thriller writer. Where do you find the time to do all this stuff?
This is a really good question. I don't know the answer.
I bet you part of the answer is the help that you get from Catherine.
Yeah, I mean, she has helped occasionally. Yes, it is, absolutely. I mean, the show would not happen without Catherine. I think the first year I probably did the bulk of kind of organizing and seeing how it was going to run. From that point onwards, it's been your show, effectively, Catherine. She's organized it. And not just sent the emails, the begging letters and everything else, but also... I think talks to me at the beginning of the year about what worked last year, what she thought. So Catherine's great because you're not a writer. You don't come from the community.
Not.
But
definitely not.
Very, very good at working out what people come out of a session feeling, and that feeds into how we do it next year.
Awesome. How did you fall into this, Catherine? Like, how did you get involved with the show?
It's a bit of a long story, but James and I are very, very old friends. So okay. I've known James as long as I've known my husband, and I've known my husband since I was 21, so long time. So yes, and so it's just admin support really for LSP to start with, and it's sort of because my children, you know, were at home still, and it's just grown and grown and grown. And I've got a marketing background, and I'm completely utterly an organizer through and through. So that's how
everybody needs. Everybody needs a Catherine Matthews in their life, then. I could use the help. All right, so let's start with the big picture here. I want to know, I wasn't fortunate enough to go to this year's show. So tell our viewers, you know, what the Self-Publishing Show Live is all about, and what, you know, what it was like this year in particular. How did it go?
Yeah, I mean, we started it back in 2020. Because we just felt that there needed to be a big show on this side of the pond. You know, we were at that point, we'd traveled to NINC and to what was 20 Books, Vegas, now Author Nation, a number of times. And we got the benefit of that gathering, but it's a long way to go from Europe. So we thought, well, there needs to be something on our side. And I think the UK and the US have led self-publishing. They are the two big centers that have been at the vanguard. The market's grown the quickest, the readers and the writers.
Sure.
And so for that point of view, and also I think placing it in the UK obviously makes it easier for people in the rest of Europe and as far away as the Middle East. What I wasn't expecting was quite how many Americans came over, because they thought they wanted to combine it with a trip to Europe. And so we've always had a good contingent of people from the US, which has been great as well. And in terms of what we're trying to do, I mean, I think right from the beginning, Catherine, we did think about, we've always had this one stream, haven't we, which has been different. You haven't been to the other conferences, you need to go at some point, but I think, I know Vegas is great, NINC's great, but there are sometimes those frustrations when there's two sessions going on at the same time you want to go to. And also I felt that there wasn't that moment where everyone's in the same room together, that community feel that indie publishing is famous for. So we wanted to create that. So we have one theatre and one stream, and everybody goes to every session. That's kind of how we started. And the first year was interesting because of the pandemic, but went pretty well.
It did go amazingly well, yeah. I mean, it was packed. Bearing in mind there was a pandemic, it was, well, no, sorry. The pandemic was a week later, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, 6 days later.
So we managed to get everybody home.
What timing?
It was unbelievable. Oh, no. March the 9th, we got it just under the wire. They closed the pubs on the Friday. It was the Tuesday, I think, and they closed the pubs on the Friday, and the everyone was told to stay at home on Monday. So we were just under the wire.
Wow.
And it was, and nobody, as far as we know, caught it either from the show, which was amazing, really.
No.
Yeah, as far as we know. But
The next time we did it, 2 years later, people got it. But that first, I mean, it had only just entered the UK at that point. It's spreading, obviously, like wildfire. But had only just entered. But and we even had a plague ship, we called it, in the evening. We had this idea of hiring a boat on the Thames and having a party with a DJ on it. And there were 500 people crammed into that boat. That really did feel like the plague ship.
Yeah.
Breeding
what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we just did one day and then the party, and it was the first one. It was really good fun, actually, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really good fun.
And well, so, how did this year compare to previous years? I can't believe it's only been 5 years for you. So I'm curious, how did this year compare to the previous years? And did anything sort of surprise you, either of you?
We did things differently this year. So we've had this one track in this one theatre. We extended it to 2 days. In 2022 mm-hmm. was our next one. We couldn't do 2021. It was in the middle of the next lockdown, so we simply couldn't do it. So 2022, 3 and 4, we continued with 2 days, but in the same theatre, single track, everyone's in the lobby. What two things happened? One is the lobby became a mini trade fair. So we have your colleagues, Dan Wood, and back in the day, Kevin and people coming over, and every other service provider for indie publishing came over. And at the beginning, we're organizers. So Catherine's saying to me, we can't afford this, you know, we need to put the price up, or we need sponsors. And so you go to sponsors, you go to DT, in the same way that people come to us to sponsor, and we say, will you sponsor? And you say yes, which is lovely and wonderful of you. But the truth is, what I noticed after a couple of years is that area in the lobby, and it's a beautiful big atrium full of glass and lots of daylight, that became a key part of the show that I hadn't really expected. That people enjoyed going around and talking to the people who they deal with over the phone or over the internet. Mm-hmm. Hello Books, you know, Written Word Media, Vellum, the Brads always come over. Sure. At least one of the Brads comes over. So these quite sort of famous names within publishing, suddenly they're all there. And so that became something we've really worked on, because it works for both of us. To have more sponsors is great for us to be able to mount the show. And it's great because this little trade fair happens alongside the tracks. And the conference is separate from that, and editorially separate from that. I think in all honesty, last year we had a few too many sponsors on stage and it wasn't its best. So it's something else we wanted to correct. And Catherine got on my case about that. That's what Catherine's very, very good at. I think you listen to people when they come out the hall, don't you? Without them realizing.
Yeah, I mean, we get feedback and I was aware. And I get why the sponsors want to be on stage, of course, absolutely. But sometimes, you know, obviously the attendees are there to learn. And there's only so much that, you know, they'd rather sort of speak to them face to face in the auditorium, in the foyer, to be honest. So it was a bit too sponsor heavy on stage last year. So we corrected that, and we did a tools session, mm-hmm. and that was perfect because it was 10 minutes. I think we had four different companies on there.
And two of them were kind of introducing people to, like, Publisher Champ, which is a kind of a book report style tool. I started using that during the year, and we've run it through Vinci Books, which is another one of my companies, and it's terrific. In fact, I think it's once you start using it, you'll never look back. And I wanted people to know about it. So although Iri, who runs it and founds it, did give us some late sponsorship, that wasn't the point of that session. It was saying, look, these are service providers you may not have heard of and you might want to use.
And Stu Grant was up there from Digital Authors Toolkit. He's done sessions for us before, but, you know, he's never particularly self-promoting himself. You know, he's just sort of saying, look, this is what you need. You need a website. And so it worked really well because it was just 10-minute slots, you know, and then I think people got the best out of that. And if they wanted to speak to them further, they were in the foyer. So
every other session was handpicked by me for the value that it was going to give authors. So we had direct selling. We had, even though KDP are our main sponsor, they're quite happy that we have a focus on that because it's quite important for authors. And we picked out areas, obviously AI is such a big issue. So we had a technical session on that. What else did we do?
Direct selling.
We had analytics, obviously, you know, writing to market analysis and stuff like that. So, but the other big thing we did this year, Jim, was to change day two. So day two has in the past been just a version of day one, with, perhaps a slightly different theme, but back in the same theatre. So day two, we decided to branch out and do workshop day. So we decided that we sort of felt there'd been this bubble in indie. You probably feel this as well as a service provider. There was this bubble around COVID where lots of, you know, thousands of people suddenly there and they wanted to go to conference. Now that subsided a bit, and the people who are left are either more experienced because they've been doing it longer, or they're coming in fresh, but they're coming in fresh and much more informed than people were 5 years ago, because there's so much stuff around, like shows like this, people seeing, watching on YouTube. Where by the time they get to a conference like ours, they kind of know the layout of the land. So they're in the market for more detailed training. So we created our workshop day as day two. We made it smaller, only 200 for this first year. And that sold out really quickly. Yeah. And we still kept the principle of everybody doing the same thing. So we had five sessions, and unluckily for the people giving the sessions, they had to do them five times. They did them concurrently, and the people just shuffled between them in this room. And in between sessions, they came out into the lobby. We had a mini version, like our key sponsors in the lobby, and it was fully catered day. So it was a little bit different feel from the main day. You got, you know, breakfast, lunch and drinks in the evening and stuff. But that went down really well, right, Catherine? I mean, the feedback's been tremendous.
The plaza, I mean, I don't know if I can name drop, but honestly, the plaza was brilliant, Westminster Park Plaza. And although it was more sort of conference style, so the other day is on the South Bank and the Queen Elizabeth Hall, which is sort of concrete city. And it's a bit of a favourite to us because we've been there quite a few times. It's a beautiful auditorium. The seats are really comfortable. But it sort of lacks sometimes in, I don't know, the coffee stops and
intimacy.
Those sort of yes, intimacy, that's good. And then,
I'm sorry, Catherine, please. I was just going to say, after you, please.
We're a bit of delay. So we decided to go to the Park Plaza, and I mean, it was a bit like, the food was amazing. The fruit looked like fruit. I mean, I couldn't get over the fruit. It was so ridiculous.
So I've got to say about the fruit, it seems like a weird thing to mention, but so SBC, the main auditorium, South Bank Centre, actually owned and run by the government, would you believe, in the UK. It's a bit sort of, I don't know, old-fashioned. And it is a bit old-fashioned, and there's demarcations inside. So we saw this bill's a bit high, and said, well, we don't, you know, that's a different company. That's a different department. We can't deal with them. And so we have all this going on. The catering is always astronomically expensive. This is a bit behind-the-scenes stuff people won't be interested in. But it is unbelievable how many thousands and thousands of dollars you pay for not very much, like small cups of coffee and stuff. And they're supposed to provide fruit in the green room. And this bowl of fruit looked, I mean, you wouldn't pick it up in the supermarket. It was,
it was all
the same color. And then the next day we went to the plaza, which was like walking into a different world. They could not do more for us. And just to symbolize the difference between these two was the most beautiful bowls of fruit lying around that looked like they had been put there waiting for Leonardo da Vinci to paint still image. And if you had a banana, somebody very discreetly replaced it very quickly. So I know it sounds silly talking about fruit, but when you're an organizer, me and Catherine were like, that's like,
amazing. We're taking photos. It was like, oh my God, we had beige fruit at one place. I mean, apples, pears and tangerines, all the same color. It was bizarre. And then, and then we went to this place, but it wasn't just that. The staff were amazing. They couldn't do enough for me. And it's like, mate, take that box off you. Whereas the South Bank, they sort of went, well, you know, I'm not going to take that box off you. We'd charge you for that box, which is, you know, it was just lovely. They were very helpful. The food was good and it went really smoothly. And the attendees, you know, the feedback's been amazing, I have to say. Really, really good from there. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think it's important that attendees kind of understand what goes on behind the scenes, because it's not just the fruit. It's like, over here in the States, if you wanted to get, let's say, I don't know, a table at a large conference, sometimes the organizers, not the organizers, but the hotel and the unions will charge you literally like $200 for a wastebasket or $400 for a strip of carpet. So there's just all these things you have to pay attention to and account for. But I can imagine as organizers, like, you guys have to tread a thin line where you're trying to appease your sponsors, but at the same time, you don't want people getting up there and giving a commercial on stage for their products or services, you want them to be providing education. So that's a difficult balance you have to maintain in order to provide the value to your attendees. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. It really came home to, you know, we felt that it was sponsor heavy last year. And us, to be fair, without casting aspersions, I sort of half inherited the programs. We had to work with that, what we had. But we were down on numbers for that main day this year. And that's the first time we've been down on numbers. And I think we paid the price for not putting on a particularly good editorial. It was some strong bits that last year. This year, nothing but positivity. And I expect we're going to do well next year. And so that's what we say to the sponsor. When I have the conversations, and we're going to start those conversations soon, we're going to say to them, it's really important for you as well as us that the stage is as high value for authors as possible and not a series of adverts, because they won't come back. But if we can fill the hall with 800 people, then that's fantastic for you. So that's the message we're giving. And next year we're going to be props even stricter and make sure that, you know, I mean, I'm thinking now about next year, obviously, and I've got some ideas, but I'm also going to be listening carefully to people speaking at NINC and Vegas, you know, who's making an impact, who's saying stuff we haven't heard before, who's a new name. We had a couple of those this year. So Zach Diamante, who I didn't know before, but I saw him.
He's been on the podcast. He's been on our podcast. He's great.
So Zach's great. And he was in Vegas. So I watched his session and it was like an immediate yes for me. I just wanted that energy in the room.
Yeah, we worked him really hard because he was on the conference day and the workshop day and had to repeat it 5 times. So
yes,
just get them sharper and sharper every time.
Yeah,
he was really good. He was really good. But I mean, I think also on the conference day, we had looking at the survey, the results that came back, we had quite a lot of newbies, which was what we really wanted. We wanted those sort of authors that couldn't afford the big conferences. The idea was to try and make the ticket, the one day ticket for the first day as cheap as possible, so we can get those new authors in who can learn from it. And actually, a lot of them were new, so it did work. It's just trying to, you learn from every single year, absolutely. You know, every single year we've been slightly different. But I think this was the best year.
Yeah. Excellent. And I love how you guys mentioned the atrium and how the atrium is this place that makes it easier for people just to sort of interact and to network. And I love how it just kind of grew organically. And that's something that we've talked about on this show when we try to encourage our authors to, if you can do it, go to a conference, because you're going to be amazed at all of the networking opportunities that happen outside of the sessions, like the hallways, the atrium type settings, the lounges, the bars. So much education happens there. Yeah. So much education happens there.
Yeah. And you make friends who are, I mean, I made friends at conferences who are my friends for life, and I've stayed in their houses. And so that is important. And it's actually is a challenge as well, because the first day is a big day and it's a big conference. And every year we do get some people saying afterwards, it would have been nice if we could have organized us to meet with genres. And we kind of do that, but people don't, unless you sort of almost handhold people. So that's something Catherine and I have a discussion about, you know, points. I've already got some ideas. I'm sure she has as well, of what we can do for next year to facilitate that. The workshop day had a different atmosphere. People sort of hit the ground running in that. 230 people in the room once with you get sponsors and speakers, everyone. And so that's people who just right from the word go were networking and mingling and talking. And I felt that the networking was fantastic on the workshop day. It really felt, and everyone worked hard, right? Even if you're just a punter going to those sessions, that's hard work, 5 sessions in a row with a quick break in between.
People were looking exhausted at the end.
Nobody missed them, because I didn't get to go to the sessions. But we were out in the lobby area. It was quite big. It sort of doesn't do it justice calling it lobby area. Beautiful plush area with a bar and so on. But it was completely quiet when the sessions were on, all 5 times. Yeah. And then the last one came out. I made a quick speech, embarrassed Catherine, and then the bar opened, and it was immediately the most fun time for 2 to 3 hours while
people had a drink.
So that
you just relax.
I think that worked well. Without analysing everything on this podcast, Catherine, but the first day is one we still need to crack that, getting people who've arrived by themselves and don't know anyone, facilitating it, and making it easier for them to get the maximum benefit.
There are a lot of introverts in this community.
Exactly.
Yeah, there is. We've done I think since the first time, actually, I've forgotten a name. Oh, goodness me. Runs the Mad Hatter, organises the Mad Hatter.
Elaine Bateman.
No, it's not Elaine. It's Josie Clements is, I think, her name.
J.A. Clements.
And she basically puts on the Facebook group, on the community, LSP and the SBS Live Facebook group, you know, just come to the pub, which is near the South Bank. I think they start at 5:00. We put some money behind the bar, and then it's all for new people who don't know anybody. It's the day before the conference, so at least they can start to meet people. And I mean, it's always really, really busy, that is. And I think it works really, really well. And it's nothing really to do with us, to be honest. No, it's just Joseph done it and organised it.
Isn't that great? And a great testament to our community that that happens, that someone organises the night before. If you're new to the conference, come along and meet people the night before in a more relaxed environment. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so important. Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes we hear the word networking, and that's that word itself is kind of anxiety-inducing. Yes. Maybe that's just me.
No, it is. It's also boring. You know, networking is like you've got to work at this, and you've got to make notes and that stuff. But the truth is that the value comes from friendships you have with people who are doing the same thing as you, and you might not be that conversation there and then that's going to give you any practical takeaway. But a month later, when you're WhatsApping each other in the middle of a rewrite of a first draft, that's when all that kicks in. So it's just enjoying yourself with people doing the same thing as you. That's what we mean by it. We'll have to come up. You're right, Jim. We have to come up with a better word than networking.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Is the conference designed for all levels of authors? You mentioned that you love that there are more newbies this year, but I've also seen some pretty big named authors, not just speaking, but attending the show as well. Does it run the gamut as far as the education and the sessions that you have?
I think this year we did something slightly different. We tried to please a lot of people. So the conference day was set more beginner intermediate, I would say.
Okay.
And then the workshop was the slightly more advanced. And I think that did work. I think the unfortunate thing was, based on the feedback that we've had, which we will learn from, that the conference day, not everybody realized that. So I think some people were expecting a little bit more advanced from the conference day, maybe didn't get that. So that's what we were planning to do. And so, there were some, you know, huge authors there at the workshop. I spoke to Rachel McLean today, actually, and, she thought it was brilliant. So.
Well, fantastic. And it's impossible to please everybody, I'm sure, as you both very well know.
Yeah. You can never please anyone. In fact, the one thing, whether you're doing this kind of thing, actually, you know, podcasting, which we've done, webinars, whenever you do a webinar, whenever you do a session in a conference, the one thing you can never get right is the pitch is not going to be right for everyone. Simple as that. That you're always going to get at least one person says, well, I knew all that. And at least one person says, I didn't know what you were talking about. So, you know, it's. I mean, I'm a big fan of having a pitch in a certain place. I don't think you can try and please everyone. That's the mistake to make, is to try and please everyone.
Yep.
The way to do it is to say, right, this is going to be at people who probably published 2 to 3 books and are thinking about how to, you know, continue their series. So we're going to talk about that. That's a better way of doing it, because even if you don't know anything, you'll get something from it. And even if you're beyond that, you'll get something from it. But, you know, trying to say, well, we're going to do a bit of everything won't work.
Okay. I'm going to bring up an author question here from Tom McAuliffe. Just want to say hello, Tom. Thanks for joining us again today. This is a great question. Perfect for both of you. Tom is asking, for those of you who are listening and not viewing, Tom asks, if there is one thing you think that differentiates the European author from the American author, what would it be?
Better teeth. Main thing. I do have an answer for this, actually, Tom. It's a really good question. I think my American author friends read a lot more self-help than British authors do. Mm. Very, very big on. They're always, I mean, WhatsApp groups where you can't open a thread without the new How to Write a Book that they're all reading, and it's all amazing. And I've read like one of them in my life. I read Save the Cat, or maybe I read the Story Grid as well. And I think in Britain, we don't do as much of that. I might be wrong on that, but my feeling is my British friends don't do that as much. With America, there's I don't know whether it's a sort of psychological thing about self-helping and bootstrapping yourself a bit more. That's one thing I can think of, Tom.
You're talking specifically about self-help when it comes to writing and publishing?
Yes, specifically. Okay. When I say self-help, I'm talking about like Save the Cat and not just writing and publishing. There's also the books. I can't remember their names because I don't read them. But there's a woman who's very good, apparently, writing books about your work-life balance at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
And the woman who sort of says you count down, she was in a bad place. She's just got into the habit of counting down from 5 to 0, and at 0 got out of bed. And if she
that's Mel Robbins. Are you talking
Mel
about
Mel Robbins? Exactly. Everyone else will know who I'm talking about. So Mel Robbins. That's exactly the sort of thing they all read all those books. I think that's more of an American thing. Might be doing a disservice to my British friends, but it feels to me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Tom has a quick follow up question I wanted to bring up as well. He asks: are online shows the way of the future, and do you think that they will eventually replace in person shows?
No.
Hope not.
I don't like them. I mean, I like podcasting. I like webinars. They're distinct, but that's like 1 hour in a week. The idea of sitting through, you know, a show online. What have we just talked about for 15 minutes?
Yeah. Networking. Sorry, I can't use that word anymore.
Use the word. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think you go to the show for so much more than you're going to learn necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's the sum of all its parts. So I really hope that isn't the case, Tom. Obviously there are some people who can't travel and it's a cost effective way of doing it. But I think if you're an author listening to this, you've never been to a show and it is cost prohibitive for you, just start to think about maybe build your family holiday and tack on the time, get the timing right. To go to one in your life, I think is something you should do.
Yeah.
I mean, people go to meet their friends that they haven't seen for a whole year sometimes. You know, it becomes a social, really. There were so many people. And also, just me as an organiser, who I'm not an author, but, you know, now some of the sponsors, we give each other hugs. It's just really nice to see everybody and sort of catch up and you know, get the most out of the time that you're there, really. Even if you're sort of not learning continuously, just have a good social and a good chat, really.
I would 100% completely agree with that. And if you are a new author who's maybe never been to a conference before, you might think that, hey, maybe this isn't for me, or there are all these best-selling authors who are going to be there. I would encourage you so much just to give it a try, because I think what you're going to find is that, hey, these people are just like me. Like, we're all in this neat little environment, this neat little community that is so supportive of one another. I could almost guarantee that you will find not only a friend, but a tribe of everybody who loves doing the same thing that you do. It's amazing. Like, you will come home feeling uplifted 100%.
Yeah. And it is always amazing. You know, I'm just coming to the end of a first draft again, and I've actually used Pro Writing Aid's manuscript critique on it, which was quite a depressing experience. It's a brilliant tool, fantastic. I thoroughly recommend it, but it is going to tell you what's wrong with your draft. And so you go through this thing where you just think, I'm a terrible writer. You know, I'm not very good. And then you go to a conference and hear someone who makes 7 figures a year say, I think I'm a terrible writer because my first drafts are always awful. And just that moment there, you know, that can lift you and make you feel normal and realize you're on the right track and everything you're doing is correct and just validates you as a writer. So that's the sort of thing that can happen in whether it's a conversation in the bar in the evening, more likely than hearing it on stage.
And they are a complete friendly bunch. They really are. And they're so desperate to help each other and others. You know, they really, to give advice and, you know, so for a newbie, it is definitely, if you can afford to go or if you live in the UK, it's just a train ride, you know, it is worth going. I would say that, however, but yeah.
What do your first time attendees tell you? Like, what are they saying after an event like this?
Well, I've got our feedback somewhere.
Look at you, all prepared.
Yeah, well, look, we go through it and make genuine notes.
I've got it as well. Yeah. We sat that way.
So we have a survey. We've had about 100, knocking on 200 replies, and almost everybody leaves detailed comments. So the people who do the survey, and that's, I think, a reasonable hit rate for surveys, because I basically say no to every survey I ever get asked to do now, because there's so many of them. So I'm very grateful for that. I think the newbies enjoyed it the most. I'd say, in fact, generally we had very, very positive comments and very positive reviews and marks for everything. But I don't think anyone who came for the first time didn't find it amazing. It's probably just one or two of the people who've been to a lot would say, oh, it could have been better type thing. But
yeah, I mean, the feedback was sort of learnt loads. Why I haven't done this before, you know, why have I taken so long to make the decision? I'm so pleased I did. There was a few of those. And, you know, I think, I've forgotten her name. Who was the first lady on the show?
Innes Johnson.
And that just brilliant feedback about her session as well from sort of newbies, really. So
she's so down to earth, as are many of the best-selling authors. Just so easily approachable.
She's lovely, really approachable.
And the split of attendees this year, if this is representative of the people who took part in the survey, so 12% had not published a book, 20% had published 1 to 3 books, 23% 4 to 10, and 45% had published 11 plus books. So it was weighted in favor of people who had published, you know, nearly half of the respondents to this survey, at least, had published 11 plus books, and the other half.
Pretty experienced crowd.
Yeah, but 12% who haven't published at all, that's not insignificant, you know, 1 in 10 people. So, yeah, or more than 1 in 10 people. So there is, you know, we do need to think about. But like I said at the beginning, I do feel that newbies are not the sort of newbies that I was 5 years ago who didn't understand the language. You know, it takes a year or two just to tune into self-publishing and publishing language.
There's a lot of noise out there.
A lot of noise and buzzwords and lead magnet and stuff. You just don't know what they mean. I think people come in now better prepared, thanks to the myriad of shows like this that are on.
I think that's excellent too for newbies to know. It's like if I'm going to a conference and I'm newer, you know, if I have maybe not even my first book published yet, or maybe I have just 1 or 2 books, but I know that there are authors who are way more experienced than I am. That might feel a little bit intimidating at first, but at the same time, it's like, well, but if I go to this conference, I'm going to be around all these experienced people who are there to help me and to get me up to that next level.
Yeah. So. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I do think another thing, ruminating out loud, as Catherine and I think about next year, we need to go back to an author panel, which is that kind of 25,000 to 75,000 a year. You know, that the people who've just got their heads into the commercial market are just making money, sort of money that's either already allowed them to retire, you know, not retire, but, you know, leave their day jobs, or they're on that track, because that's such a key area.
Yeah.
And talking to somebody who's a millionaire is fantastic, and it is motivating. And we did get calls for that as well. We had E.L. James and Lucy Score last year, and we didn't really have that big headliner this year. So that's something else we need to think about next year. But I think that mid-list author is so, because they're going through it at that stage, that's very motivating to hear. I've always said right from the beginning, if you make $15 million a year, that's absolutely amazing. But I bet the most significant thing that happened to that author was when they didn't have to go to work anymore and became a full-time author.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Which is the 100 grand level, right? Or less than that. So that's such a big moment. I think we need to focus on that. Perhaps day one, that's kind of our focus for next year.
Yeah, no, on my list, 2 panels. We need to do 2 panels as well, just because you can fit more into panels. You get, you know, a sort of wider coverage of authors as well. And I think it's really important that.
We had the author Steph Green on the show not too long ago, and she's in 6-figure category, maybe even higher than that now. But one thing that really stood out to me during our conversation was how she had experienced different peaks and valleys, where there are times where she was talking about this one instance, where she just absolutely loved the premise for her next book. She was all about it. She was so passionate about it. She couldn't wait to publish it. And it just kind of bombed on her. But she picked herself up, dusted herself off, and just tried to and figured it out over the years and just got right back up there.
Yeah.
With her sales. And
hearing that in itself is motivating.
Absolutely. Okay. I want to shift a little bit here, and I want to talk about sort of community and culture. We talked a little bit about this before we went live today, but I see that Self-Publishing Show Live has a strong sense of community out there. How do you foster that as part of the conference experience? And I want to approach that in the context of just the indie publishing culture in general, where it's just, you know, it's so neat that we've been doing this since 2008. And we've seen this culture evolve into a community, into a culture of just authors helping authors to get them to that next level. So how do you foster that with your events and everything that you're doing, James?
Yeah, I mean, funny enough, I had a call today from a journalist in the UK from a national newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, and he's doing a profile, a feature piece on the rise of self-publishing, the rise of the indie author. He'd spoken to several authors, and a few of them had mentioned our courses, so he wanted to talk to me. But cool. I spent most of that sort of educating him a bit on that exact thing, because he's from traditional world. Newspapers and magazines are very close to traditional publishing. His friends get deals at Macmillan and, you know, HarperCollins, whatever, and they go to those book launches, and the authors are kept at arm's length. They're almost kept in the dark about sales figures. They get these vague notes every 6 months, and they don't really talk to each other apart from occasionally over a glass of champagne at one of their launches. And we could not be more different. The culture difference in indie publishing. I mean, Craig Martell, you know, coined that phrase that a rising tide raises all ships. Yeah. I mean, that is exactly right. And that's the 100% the ethos of our show. The self-publishing show is about people getting on stage and saying, this is what's working for me now, without fear of emboldening their competitors. This is what's not working for me, without fear of, you know, of giving any secrets away. And the reason for that is because we can only write so many books, and there are a lot of readers out there. We're not really competitors in the sense that traditional publishing, which only had its 20 books a year or whatever and had to make a big splash on every single one and didn't want to go up against another big seller. That was a whole different... We have nothing to do with that. We are reader-led, and our readers are hungry. Yes. Romance writers will have told you in the past on here, I'm sure, that they'll publish a book in the morning, and by the evening they'll have emails from people saying, when's your next book coming out? So they end up deliberately putting friends' books on their newsletter list. So you should read this series, because there's, you know, we can't write quick enough to satiate the readers. And and that's the other thing I talked to them about, which I think feeds into our culture, is how close we are to readers. And basically most indie authors are readers, right? We are readers. Oh, that's where we come from. And so that big overlap and having that relationship with readers, the power for me hasn't gone from traditional publishing to authors. The power has gone from traditional publishing to readers. Readers are now more in control of the books they read than they ever have been before. They guide writers into the genres and subgenres that they want. They invent subgenres that they want to see as reader writers, and then they become big things. And I love that. So that's, for me, it's I would say unique. There's not many, I don't think even the music industry, I think that's quite cutthroat and quite commercial these days. I think of all the big industries I can think of, I can't think of one. And maybe it's naive of me, and maybe it's still the foothills of this industry maturing, but I can't think of another industry that's friendlier and more community-minded.
I love that perfectly. And I think you're right. The status quo of how books are launched has completely changed from the way it used to be done. And now readers are leading the charge. Influencers are leading the charge, and indie authors are closer to their readers than anybody in the traditional realm.
Yeah.
What a great answer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
So what's happening next? Like, what are you thinking about for next year? You guys both hit upon it a little bit here and there, but any big reveals? Well, what are you thinking about for next year?
There aren't any big reveals, Catherine, because we haven't made any decisions yet, have we?
I've got a list.
It's been 2 weeks.
Jim, she's always got a list. She phones me up in the morning when I'm trying to write my book. She said, I've got a list for you. I wouldn't be without it, though.
I bet she has spreadsheets, too. Yes, oh, my goodness.
Spreadsheets, got lists. I am a list person, and I have to tick them off, and I get quite aggressive if they don't get ticked off.
The show spreadsheet's quite a work of art now, isn't it? We should get them.
Yeah, it's well.
They must be color coded and everything.
Oh,
okay.
Lots of color coding, Jim.
I'm a little intimidated over here.
Yeah, some look up in there. So I think we've got to think about what worked really well, and obviously we know the workshop day worked really well. We know that the lobby or trade fair works well. We know what worked well on the stage, what didn't work so well. So we'll basically make a list of that. We've got to think about the practicalities as well. It's a colossally expensive event to host. We always launch it nervously because we could be in the hole for a lot of money. Joe Solari and I have very similar conversations. And Joe,
I bet you do.
Joe Sues, Catherine and I had dinner after the conference and a lot of discussion about staring into this financial black hole that you're
for our listeners
facing.
Who don't know, Joe and Sue Solari run the Author Nation show. That's another big conference in Las Vegas here in the States.
Yeah.
And so we'll take that. That will be our starting point. We'll then look at the practicalities of locations and what we want to build on. I think it wouldn't be, you know, a secret to say that we will do the workshop day again. I would like to expand it slightly. I'd like to have some practical workshops so you could potentially go into... So this time we intended everybody to go into every room. But I think I would have a few more rooms that will be more niche-y, that maybe you're going to sit down for an hour with somebody who builds Wix websites. And you're going to learn the practical nature of building a Wix website, which is such an important tool for us to have. And maybe have a Facebook ads expert who's going to be there and say... Maybe have two Facebook rooms, you know, one kind of your first Facebook ads campaign to aimed at people who are just getting into it, and one that is how to set up a landing page intervention moment and run feedback campaigns, more advanced.
It's very
stuff.
Pragmatic.
Yeah. So have sort of, these more detailed sessions that won't be for everyone, but that's okay because we'll have people moving between performance. So that's what I'm thinking at the moment.
So the big reveal is... But it is happening next year. That is the big reveal.
Yay.
But we're not sure when.
Yeah. We can give a link out if you want to pre-register. Because like I say, the workshop, they did sell out months in advance last time. So we'll expand as much as we can, but we don't want to expand it too much because we want it to hold that same feel of intimacy around it. So
I have some links. I see that I misspelled one of them, but this one should work. Now, if viewers go to selfpublishingshow.com, they can learn all about what's going to happen with 2026. Can folks register already for 2026 ahead of time?
They can just
register, and then when we actually make the pages live for all the information, they'll get a notification of that.
Yeah, that does work. So it's a pre-registration, and we just make sure, particularly because of the workshop day, that people who went before and people who pre-registered get first opportunity before we announce it. More widely,
is there still a digital ticket available? Can people still purchase a digital ticket for 2025?
Yeah, so that's something we haven't mentioned. Something else we do that I think
I think this is amazing.
Yeah, unique to our show is we don't just take the feed from a static iPad or even the cameras that they provide in the show. We bring in film crews. So film crews make professional production values of every session, including the workshop sessions. If you didn't get to the work, you didn't get a ticket this year. And we know Catherine and I had to turn a lot of people away in the last couple of weeks leading up to the event who just wanted to come to workshop session a bit late in the day. But the workshop ticket, the live ticket is $99 and it covers every session and every previous year. So whenever you buy it
and
each year, you get more previous years.
And we've got, I think, 14 bonus sessions that the actual attendees wouldn't have seen either. So the ticket holds quite a lot, really.
So $99 and I can get access to all the sessions going back to 2020?
Yes.
Yeah. And then 25, you'll get the conference and the workshop sessions. And I think it's 14 bonus sessions. I'm still loading them up onto Thinkific.
Yeah. So the bonus sessions are interesting, but they are... They're a mix, but some of them are things like public relations. I think public relations has its place for us, but I don't think it's relevant to everybody. And it's probably just not quite relevant enough to have on the main stage, bearing in mind that we have a single track at present. And so that's perfect for the digital show. So the digital show, if you want to do, interested in the PR session, there's a fantastic session there, which we're putting together. There's a session on writing comedy, which again is quite niche-y, probably not enough time on the main stage for that, but perfect for a digital session. And we've got actually quite a well-known comedian in the UK doing that one as well. So
how fun. Okay, we're getting close to time here. I want to ask you both, what was the most fulfilling part of this year's show for both of you? Well, James, we could start with you.
I think... For various reasons, this show has been completely from beginning to end organized by me and Catherine, and we made all the decisions we were to make. All the editorial decisions, as well as the practical side of it. And so I think I'm most proud of this year, because also we were told at the time by people leaving the venue, best show ever. Many people said that, and we got some stuff there. So that was my takeaway. I didn't really enjoy it. I don't really enjoy it until it's finished. But when the drinks start flowing,
understandable. At
the end of the workshop day, my first drink there was a very, very enjoyable cold beer, because it suddenly felt like we'd done it. We'd pulled it off, and you know, yeah. Despite her choking on her drink there, I would say Catherine is a big part of that.
Yeah, so mine is, so last year it was, from my point of view, it was all well organized, it all went smoothly, great. This year again, all well organized, smoothly, but I came away thinking, yeah, that was really good. I was really, really buzzed about it, and the feedback was fantastic, and everybody seemed very happy, which is, you know, what it's about for me, is everybody's got smiling faces really, and had a good few days, and you know, enjoyed it. Spoke to the people they wanted to, spoke to the sponsors. The sponsors were happy as well, which, you know, we have to tick that off as well, obviously, because they're a huge part, and, you know, they help the indie world go round. And, I think that was, it was just, everybody was smiling, and it's, oh my God, I didn't have any complaints either to deal with, so that was good.
Wow. So, yeah. Well, congrats to you both. I mean, what you've built over the last few years here is amazing, and it takes a ton of work, and you're still doing it, and you're planning for next year, so... Congratulations to you both. That's got to feel phenomenal for you. What an accomplishment.
Got to get you over, Jim.
I know. Tell Dan. What's got me? Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah,
he's talking it the whole time. He's always there, Dan.
Dan will tell you that I do a very good drunken tour of statues in London in the evening.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you'll enjoy.
I'm sure I would. All right. Well, I want to thank you both again very, very much for your time today. I know you're both extremely busy people, so I appreciate it. I'm going to go through some of our show closures here for our viewers out there. I want to thank you all for joining us week in and week out. And then a welcome to some new people who have joined this week. I saw some new names in the comments section, so welcome to you. If you could do us a favor and like and share this episode, and then subscribe to our YouTube channel, it helps us expand the word out there and attract guests like James and Catherine. If you want to keep in the know about upcoming shows, simply go to d2dlive.com and bookmark that so you can see who our next guests and what our next topics are going to be. And for anybody out there who is listening or who is watching, and maybe you're just dabbling now or you're investigating self-publishing for the first time, you can go to drafttodigital.com and sign up for a free account today. James and Catherine, thanks once again for joining me. I really, really appreciate your time, your knowledge, and your expertise. Hang out for a minute, go back to the green room, grab a snack, grab a pint. I'll see you back there in a second. In the meantime, I'm going to play a quick commercial here for DDD Print. For everybody else, we'll see you here next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jim.
You bet.
Ebooks are great, but there's just something about having your words in print. Something you can hold in your hands, put on a shelf, sign for a reader. That's why we created DDD Print, a print-on-demand service that was built for you. We have free, beautiful templates to give your book a pro look, and we can even convert your ebook cover into a full wraparound cover for print. So many options for you and your books. And you can get started right now at drafttodigital.com. That's it for this week's Self-Publishing Insiders with Draft to Digital. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts and share the show with your will-be author friends. And start, build, and grow your own self-publishing career right now at drafttodigital.com.